If you could communicate directly with the non-physical side of life, what would you ask? How to connect with the cosmic internet. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Frank DeMarco. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Frank DeMarco, his book, The Cosmic Internet. Frank, what is the cosmic internet?
Cosmic internet is something that we've been hooked into all our lives, and people don't recognize it. And that's why I'm trying to, that's why I came up with that analogy. Although I think my guys upstairs would say they came up with the analogy. They like to take the credit for these things, and I like to give it to them because I'm keeping the royalties. You know how it is?
Well, you know, it's funny because your guys may be also my guys.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure because they were telling me it's, years ago it was the wireless internet of life.
Well,
so we're pretty close.
You know, here's the thing. Talking to the other side, communicating with what people call dead people, or disembodied spirits, is natural, it's easy, and we do it all the time, and it's much like talking on the telephone. When you know, when you go to pick up a telephone, make a call, you don't have to have a special attitude, you don't burn incense to the telephone, you don't you know, have to have a certain set of beliefs, you just pick up the phone and you call. Well, the person on the other end, the difference with the telephone is you know who you're talking to. So let's transfer that to the internet. Now you can have friends, as I do, and I'm sure you do, halfway across the world that you've never met. You only know them by what you connect to them with. In other words, oh, supposing you're interested in auto mechanics, and that's what you talk about, you know, back and forth. Or supposing you're talking about UFOs, or you have a thing on conspiracy theories, or anything at all. The internet is a way, I mean, I'm talking about the usual internet now, the electronic internet.
Right.
It's a way where you sign on and you talk to people who are interested in the same things you are. You meet them, but you only meet them virtually. You don't ever probably ever meet them physically. You may not know anything about them. They may not have the right name. But and with the information that they give you, you have to judge using your own discretion because you can't know. Of course, that's true of everything, but it's even more so in that case. And it seemed to me that talking to the guys upstairs, and this is a thing that has evolved in my practice over 20 years. I didn't start with this conclusion that I have come to. It seems to me it's much like dealing with the internet. In fact, before we had a physical internet, we didn't really have a good analogy to what it is like to talk to the other side because we had never, you know, there was nothing physical that was like it. But this pretty much is. If I get in a space, in a receptive space, and I have a serious question, or if I want to just chat, let's put it that way, I will be able to ask a question, wait, and the answer will come. And usually I do this in my journal just because I'm used to it.
Sure.
I've kept the journal since 1966, however long that is. But I've been doing this in the journal form, and it's quite comfortable. I can do it just talking, too, but I like it in the journal because it's a little more, you know, it's a less of a temporary product. I have it there at the end, you know, because when you do a thing like this, you're in a slightly altered state. And when you come back to a less altered state, you may not remember it without reminders. All right.
Well, it's almost like Neil, when he was doing his conversations with God, he would just take down those notes, right?
Sure. Yeah. And that's what struck me about it. He was doing the same thing, only he was getting up at 3 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. Or he was in his car when he was doing it.
You can do it anywhere, and you do it anywhere. That's my point. We already do it. But a lot of times, you're getting prompting from the other side. You know, people say, I don't know why, but I was just moved to do that. Or, I just had a hunch, you know, or anything like that. To my mind, what that is, and I'm pausing because I'm hearing all these definitions. And each definition is a little bit wrong, but you have to proceed as best you can. Keeping it still for the moment that we're talking about different people, you and I as different people talking to other different people on the other sides, you connect with them, you can get the information, and at the end you have to use your own discernment as to how much of it you believe or don't believe. They can be wrong. They don't know everything. When I started this, I used to think, well, if they're disembodied, they know everything. Well, maybe theoretically, but not in any practical sense.
That's true. We think they do.
I don't know about you, but I started with the assumption that they did. But as it turns out, I would ask them things like to predict the future, and for other reasons, I now realize that's not really very possible. But I would ask them to predict the future, and the prediction would be wrong. And you know, I really got quite bent out of shape about that. And later, they explained to me, much later, that due to my expectations, they had a choice of either making a prediction, which might or might not come true, or saying they didn't know, which would make me then say, well, you don't exist. It sounds ridiculous only because it is ridiculous, but that's where I was. Did I go through it too fast?
No, not at all. Not at all. When you were talking about hunches, how many people get that, but they don't react to it?
Well, some don't react to it, but I think more people react than ever admit it. It's not considered quite respectable. And I think, oddly enough, I think superstitions are well, let's leave superstitions out of it. Let's just stick with hunches. You get a hunch, and the hunch is not always right. But what in your life is always right?
So many people will say, I knew this. I knew this, but I didn't act on it.
And sometimes they do act on it.
And sometimes they do. Is it, here's the big question, though, Frank. Is it this force, you call it the guys upstairs, or is it truly something within us that
Bingo.
We have?
It's both. As far as I can tell, it's both.
We are getting some help, right?
We're getting help, but it's also part of ourselves. Because one of the things that I have learned over the years, and that's one of the reasons to write this book, was to explain these things. One of the things is we, you and I, as physical beings, also extend into the non-physical.
At the same time.
You couldn't be here otherwise. You see, they've gone into this long description of the physical world as a special created case of the non-physical world.
Then we are they.
Exactly. 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 Now, having said that, though, that's like saying everything is all one. And that's true in a certain sense. But then if you've said that and you leave it at that, there's nowhere to go. Everything's all one. Okay, let's talk about sports, you know, except we're on both teams.
Yeah.
The thing is, in the physical world, we have delayed consequences. We have the perception of separation. And we have this one moment. And now here's something they told me. And as soon as they said it, I realized, yeah, it's absolutely true. There's two kinds of time. There's the one moment, like where you and I are right now talking.
Right.
Okay.
Now.
And then there's everything else. So we were at that right moment when you and I first said hello, but we're not there anymore, obviously. And we're not where we were when I started this sentence. Right.
Right.
The one moving moment is like a wave going across the ocean. We always have to live on that one moment. It's designed that way, which means we never see our lives in the right perspective because the present moment always has an exaggerated importance because that's where we are and the only place we can be.
Have you been able to answer the question, what the heck are we even doing here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have?
Oh, yeah.
Share it.
In the shortest way I can say it is that unlike people who think that the Earth is a school, the guys have been saying what the Earth is a special place where you can create your own mind or soul, whichever way you choose to look at it, and we can talk about that if you want. You are here to choose and choose and choose and choose, and in so doing, you create the mind that will then go over to the other side. It's actually on the other side, but it'll be there when we die. So our whole life is a sort of a preparation in one sense. It's a preparation for the life that we're going to lead afterwards.
How many are out there like us, Frank, on other planets, wondering the same?
I don't know, but I do know that they have no question that there are skillions. They also, though, say that the people who are living on other planets that we'll never hear of are no farther from them than we are from them.
That's right.
Therefore, we have an indirect connection, and you can talk to somebody on Proxima Centauri or somewhere if you happen to have something in common and a way to talk to them.
That's true.
It's a weird thought in a sense.
But that does tell you how you're connected.
Well, you know, I think it was E.F. Schumacher, the economist, you know, the one who said small is beautiful. And he said, it's amazing once you set out to do some real work, how much theory you can do without. You know, you say, we don't know how it works, and it's true. But the fact that it does work is the important part to me.
And it works like a fine-tuned machine.
Yeah, sure. Now, it works better if you are tuned as an individual instrument. You know, it's better if you don't consider yourself to be only a machine without a spirit, without a soul. I'm hesitating to get into all those things. The difficulty is that in our day, when you use words like spirit and soul, people assume you mean it in a religious basis that isn't exactly right, but isn't exactly wrong either, because the religions are the ones who have kept the traditions to explain why and how we're more than our physical bodies.
That's true. When you attune yourself, however you do it, and I'm saying this to everybody, you really are able to get yourself into this position to be able to do some incredible things.
Well, now, George, that it sounds like I have maybe not communicated it exactly right. I don't mean attuning yourself like an exercise
or
so much
pitchfork.
As it's the way that you live. It's who
tuning
you are for. Rather than what specifically you're doing. If you reduce selfishness, if you practice living in love, if you don't live in fear, if you assume that you're part of something that is non-physical as well as physical, that's what I mean. That all tunes you up. It makes you more...
Automatically.
It tunes exactly. You. It makes you more able to receive.
Stay away from negativity.
Yeah, yeah.
And it...
Yeah, negativity, you know, like everything else. I mean, fear has its place in life, but anything out of place is like a plant out of place, which is called a weed.
Now, but add in real life, Frank, and it's so difficult sometimes for people to do this. Case in point, let's say somebody is practicing this and they're just life is good and they care about other people, and then bang, a tornado takes their house away, maybe kills part of their family. I bet that person is shaking their head right now going, what did I do? Why me?
And those are always unanswerable questions.
You can't. That's right. You cannot answer that.
No. You can explain them away, but you can't really answer them. But it isn't necessary to know why me, at least in my opinion, and which is a good thing since we don't know why me. It isn't like you, crossed against the light and God's mad at you now, so he'll send a tornado, you know. That isn't what I believe happens. But life happens around us. And what the guys upstairs have said to me many times, it doesn't matter what you choose in any given situation. We will always have more choices that we can lay out in front of you from wherever you go to then. But you know, life will be a series of choices. So your house has been destroyed by a tornado. You have a huge amount of choices there. You can go into bitterness. You can go into shock. You can go into anger. You can do a lot of things. Or you can say, this happened and I must deal with it.
And move on.
I'm not saying that one is a better one than the other, because in a different person's circumstances, a different choice might be almost forced on them in a way. By forced on them, I mean, if you've lived your whole life on the assumption that there are victims and villains, and a tornado comes, you just make the tornado into the villain. But if you live your whole life on the assumption that life is good and that it has a purpose, then you say, well, I don't know what this is all about, but I will do the best I can from here.
Where does consciousness fit into all this?
Consciousness is the key to the whole thing, because if, as Gurdjieff used to say, if you're asleep, you can't do any work.
And if you're awake?
Most people think they're awake. And I'm not making a difference between other people and myself either. I always think I'm awake too. But then sometimes something will happen, and then I will really wake up, and I'll say, my God, I've been sleeping for weeks. It's a very strange feeling the first time it happens to you. I don't know if you've experienced that.
Oh, yeah, I have. How about you in dreams? Do you do that?
The interesting thing is that the more work I do with the guys upstairs, the less I dream. If I spend time without doing it, then I'm more likely to remember them. I think there's a connection there, but I have no idea what it would be.
Are you able to get into this mode now anytime you want?
Oh, sure.
This connection?
Sure, because it's not a different mode for me. I'm living part here and part there, and so are you, and so is everybody who's
sure.
Listening to it. It's just that I've got it incorporated in my belief system now.
It's not that you have to turn it on and turn it off.
Well, you couldn't really turn it off and still live, but what most people do is turn off their awareness that it's there. Let's put it that way.
Where does evil fit into all this, Frank? How come through all this great righteousness, there are people out there that are despicable? You know they're out there. I know they're out there. Why? Why are they there?
Well,
what haven't they been able to accomplish? I can't believe that these people, whoever they are, would want to do this and hurt other people.
This is a little bit of a complicated answer. Do we have more than a couple minutes?
We have.
Well, I mean, before we
three and a half before the break. That's good.
How many?
3.5 minutes.
That's enough. There's several levels of this. To start on the easiest part of it, a lot of times what seems evil to us is because that's what our values are, and the values don't match. So that, for instance, if your value was cooperation and you saw somebody who was very aggressive, how it could turn out might look evil. That's on a superficial level. But if we're talking about real evil, they have said that real good and real evil exist, and they have to exist because we're living in duality.
Right.
Everything has to balance out.
You need balance.
Now, it can balance out in different ways. You could have an Adolf Hitler concentrate a huge amount of evil in a small place, and that would be a different picture from a lot of, oh, I don't know, Al Capone's running Chicago, which would be a little grayer and a little more widespread. Do you see what I'm saying? But they're saying you can't have even one more plus than minus. It always balances out because we're in duality. That's the short answer. A slightly longer answer is, if my values are, so everybody starts from the values they have. That's what we're here to do, is to form who we are. If I see something that have values that are, I'll give an example, hunting and fishing. I'm not a hunter and a fisher, and I could easily get to a situation where I would condemn the people who are. I'd say, well, that's cruel to the animal or whatever it would be. But I recognize that's not objectively true. That's just that I identify more with the potential suffering of the animal than I do with all of the skill and all of the, providing for your family and all that goes into hunting and fishing. I don't want anybody to think that either of those is my attitude. That's an example where if someone were a strong, a vegetarian or if they were strong in animal rights, mm-hmm. they could look at hunting and fishing as an absolute evil. Whereas if somebody were a frontiersman or something and they're saying, this is how you feed your family.
Yeah,
and this
exactly.
is what we've always done. To them, the other attitude is evil because you're still eating meat, but you're eating it from the supermarket.
Well, and then they'd also be able to say, did you know that the deer population freezes to death or starves to death because there are too many, and you have to call them out?
Yes, but it isn't so much a practical argument as they each one feel I'm right and he's wrong. Not I'm accurate and he's inaccurate, but I am good and he is evil or doing evil. And I think self-righteousness is probably the biggest thing that has gotten us into our present mess, because two sides aren't talking to each other. They both have valid points, or they wouldn't, I've never heard of an argument that only has one side. But today, when people are saying, you're not only opposed to what I believe, but you're evil to do it, or you believe in evil, that's the original dead-end street.
How many times, though, have you heard, Frank, where people who do not get along talk about various things and nobody listens to the other person? They're screaming over each other. Whatever happened to that give and take?
I try to avoid that kind of circumstance myself.
I do that. I mean, that's not how I run this show, and that's probably one of the reasons why it's so successful. People get a chance to talk and express their views, and we'll do that next with Frank DeMarco on Coast to Coast AM. Well, for just 25 cents a day, you can become a Coast Insider, a Streamlink member, and participate in downloads, podcasting, and just have some downright fun with that. And the next Tuesday, by the way, for you Coast Insiders, we will have our video chat. It's coming up again. We do that every month that I'm in Los Angeles. I'll come back in a moment. We'll take your calls as we continue talking with Frank DeMarco about his work, The Cosmic Internet. And welcome back to Coast with Frank DeMarco. We'll take your phone calls as well. Did you remember ever reading an old book by U.S. Anderson called Three Magic Words, Frank?
No, I never read that one.
Okay, that one very similar to the message that you're conveying that we've been talking about tonight as well. It fascinates me how so many people have had that ability, that they have tapped into this cosmic internet. They just never knew it.
That's right. That's right. Well, everybody has it. You have to have it.
You have to have it.
You have to have, sure, because if you are in the physical, you extend into the non-physical. Our minds are in the non-physical, not the brains, but the minds. They've explained the brain as like a switching system that keeps track of where our body is in the moving moment, and the mind as being in the non-physical. You're part of the non-physical. Therefore, if you have a good enough connection upstairs, as I always say, once you're upstairs, they're connected to the rest of the internet. So you're already plugged in. You already got your ISP, and the ISP came with birth, right? You can't lose that connection. All you can do is lose the awareness of the fact, or maybe never get awareness of the fact that you have the connection.
I don't believe in coincidences.
No, I don't either. There's no such thing.
Nope. Things happen for a reason, whether it's fate, whatever you want to call it, but it's not a coincidence. It just is not. And I've heard so many stories of just strange things that occur. People, thinking of other people, they turn the corner and there they are.
Sure. Somebody once said that a scientific definition of coincidence is, I don't think I want to think about this anymore.
I look. You've talked about three simple techniques. What are they?
The three simple techniques for which part of this?
Well, in terms of programming yourself and how to get it.
Okay.
To get
in terms of living more connected.
Right.
Okay. Well, it's funny you should ask that question. Somebody once asked me, let's see, where was this? It was years ago. I can remember the point of the story, but not the setup of it. But what it amounts to is, I know what it was. Someone had asked, because Rita Warren and I were doing a series of sessions, one every week, and I was putting them on the internet, on the downstairs internet, that is.
Yeah.
And so some of our friends were responding with questions, and somebody said, well, give us the best five exercises for spiritual development. And I thought, that's interesting. Let's see what they said, you know. And one of the things that they said was practice love every day. And you practice love first. You keep raising the bar. They said first you love something like a dog that loves you. And then you love a cat, which isn't quite as lovable because the cat loves itself. And then you work to love a woodchuck. And the woodchuck doesn't care one way or the other. And then maybe a rattlesnake, and maybe you're afraid of rattlesnake, okay? So that was one. And then another one. Now, this is interesting. This isn't quite to the point of you asking, but by the fact that it's in my mind, I think I'm going to say it. And that is another one they had is practice changing points of view, which goes back to where we were before the commercial. They said it doesn't mean necessarily in an argument, but just if you're talking to somebody, like, okay, George, you and I are talking now. Practice changing points of view so that you can see where I'm coming from and I can see where you're coming from. And it can be done at different levels of depth, of course. They said that's actually a very spiritual we'll say spiritual. It's a spiritual exercise. Doesn't seem like it has anything to do with it at all, does it? But they said what that will do is weaken your identification with yourself as being different from other things, from other people. Now, the exercises you were talking about are really more determined. I need to find a way to approach this because the first of them is reprogramming your robots. And it's
and can you reprogram somebody?
Easily, actually. But here's the thing. You can only do it as most things in my life now, it requires extensive explanation. I'm no longer able to tell you the time. I have to tell you how to make a watch. You have an automatic reflex that kicks in whether you want to or not. I don't know. Your mother used to yell at you maybe, and now if a woman is mad at you, you freeze, you know, or you get angry or defensive or whatever it is. Okay.
Thanks to mom, right?
It is not helpful. It is making your life difficult. But what I would call a robot, or what I sometimes think of as an EXE file, at some point in your life, it said, this is what you want me to do, right? Okay, I'll do it. And what happened is, maybe when your mother, maybe you were 4 years old and your mother was mad at you, and it was terrifying for a four-year-old to have his mother that he depends on be mad at him. Oh, God, what does this mean, you know?
Sure.
So something kicked in and said, okay, from now on, if a woman gets mad at me, I will back off, or I will do whatever, you know, or maybe I will fight back. I don't know what it would be. It would depend on the individual. That robot thinks that it's doing what you want. It's trying to help you, okay? It's all it's doing is what you asked it to do decades maybe ago. Now, you might know that intellectually and not get anywhere with it, you know? It would be very frustrating. I always have this response. I wish I didn't, but I do. What you have to do, and you can do it very easily, you get into a nice, calm, receptive space, and you ask that robot as if it were an individual intelligence within you, a separate intelligence, which in a manner of speaking it is, and you say, how are you serving me by producing this reaction in me? And you wait. And you're not liable to get an answer in words, but you might get a memory of a situation. Maybe that memory when you were 4 years old comes up for the first time in your life.
Or maybe you get that little voice in your head.
You could, but I tend to downplay that because I'm afraid too many people expect either visuals or auditory, and they don't necessarily get what they're expecting, and they don't notice what they do get, okay? But for whatever reason, when you get it, the thing, you can go into that feeling, and from the feeling, then you're connected with that part of yourself that was created then. It's almost like you split off a little part of yourself to continue to execute the program, and you say to it, okay, thank you for helping me all these years, but this isn't what I want. From now on, we're going to change the program. Well, now what I want is when this situation happens, just call it to my attention so that I don't lose track of it. But you leave the emotional and the spiritual and the physical reactions to me. Okay? Now, if you look at it as an EXE file, what you've done is you've called it into active memory. You've changed it. You've resaved it. Now it's going to do what you told it. Okay, if you look at it as a robot, you gave the robot new instructions, and it says, oh, okay, that's what you want me to do. I can do that. That's cool. What's happening there, it takes away all the blame on yourself. People blame themselves very easily. And it takes away the blame if you're helping somebody else do this robot work, as I call it. You're not blaming them for being inferior or for being, you know, failures in any way. You're just saying to them, here's what happened. If you want to change it, just change it. It happens. I swear, George, it works easily. If someone has already done the analysis, this can take away the sting from something that they've never been able to get away from. They know why, but they haven't been able to do it, okay? Or if they're more like me, they might have the feelings and the feelings churn in, but they don't really know what goes on. It'll help them to do the analysis. Either way, as soon as you've done the analysis from the feeling, you've reprogrammed the robot, and you are, to that extent, freer.
Now, as much as this works, let's say for you, you are human. You have your bad moments, don't you?
Of course. Right. I have bad months, George. I don't have just moments.
As long as they're not years, that's all that matters.
Anyway.
Let's go to some of the phone calls. They're lining up here for you. San Antonio, Texas. Mike, get us going. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Mike.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I was just wondering, earlier you asked a question about evil and how that would relate. And the answer kind of went along with vegetarians versus hunting. I was just wondering if it could be expanded to maybe, you know, like two guys go into a store and blow away the clerk working or anything like that, you know, like the real evil.
That's pure evil.
Right, exactly.
Yes, and I thank you for that question. I apparently didn't make it clear. I started by saying sometimes perception of evil is just a difference of opinion. But yes, actual evil exists. And the guys have said it exists because it has to exist because everything in a life and duality is in balance. You can't have good without evil any more than you can have up without down or in without out.
You know, somebody who, you know, just walks into a store, guns down somebody, can't have any respect for anybody, including themselves.
Well, what I'm learning is, don't judge, because I can never have the data on that other person's life. I don't know what frustrated him. I don't know what happened. I'm not at all, by the way, saying, you know, it's okay or that, it, you know, we should be understanding.
Well, at least take the money. Don't shoot the guy, right?
Well, see, the thing is, George, we don't know anything about what motivated the guy. We don't know how sane he was when he did it. We don't know anything about it. And don't...
Would a sane person kill somebody like that?
Sane people seem to kill people all the time. Well, I guess that depends on your definition of sanity.
Yeah, exactly. See, I don't think sane people commit those kinds of heinous acts.
Okay, now this is an example of a value, and you share it, and I share it, and I'm sure our caller shares it. We value human life, and human life is not to be destroyed just for somebody else's convenience. Right?
That's right.
I assume that's the one way we could put it. And I cannot see killing people any more than I can see torturing children or using children as sex objects.
Or hurting somebody.
Exactly. Those are not moral things to do. They're wrong. I know a lot of people don't like to use the word wrong anymore. But
there are other people who would do this freely with no conscience at all.
Yes, I know. But the ticker here is, on the one hand, to keep our discernment and say this is wrong, and on the other hand, not to go into condemnation and say you are wrong because you and I don't know what's going on with that person. That gets hard, too, you know? You look at somebody like Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin, and I have strong feelings about those people. I can't easily say, I can't judge you.
I'm convinced there was something wrong with those people.
Well, these people were clearly psychopaths, but the guys upstairs always say you never have the data to judge another person's life. In fact, they actually go further, and they say you don't even have the data to judge your own life.
Let's go to Fairbanks, Alaska, Viola, west of the Rockies, way west. Hi, Viola.
Hi. Hi, Frank. Hi, George.
How are you?
I want to say that I am enjoying the show very, very much.
Thank you.
Frank, I noticed that your insight is very similar to Esther and Jerry Hicks and their communication with Abraham. Are you aware of their work?
I'm aware of their work because Hampton Roads published Lynn Grabhorn's Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting. And apparently that is very congruent with their work. But I'm only aware of it through that. I haven't looked at it myself.
Oh, okay. And I have a question for you, Frank. Can one oversoul or higher self be embodied in more than one person during the same time frame here on Earth?
Yes,
and
I'll
take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Thanks,
Viola. Go ahead, Frank.
Thanks for the call. Yes, it appears so. In fact, they actually say that they don't quite call them oversouls, but I think it's the same concept. They say that our larger being can not only encompass other humans on Earth at the same time, it can encompass people who are in some foreign, on another planet or another solar system, and it can include things like clouds, rocks, trees, whales. So it isn't just as simple as the oversoul being several people. I don't know that they have any limits on it.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Danae in Hollywood, California. First time caller. Hi, Danae.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're great.
I just had a question for Frank. I know he mentioned Carl Jung earlier, and I was wondering how he equates synchronicity into all this and what he believes that it means.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about synchronicity here, Frank.
I missed the verb in her sentence, though. I heard most of it, but I couldn't hear the verb.
Well, let me throw out an example.
What is it that she asked?
A guy is, let's say he's at an airport. True story. Guy's at an airport. He's had a dream of this woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's at the airport. He sees this woman walking down the airport. And he goes, my God, that's the girl in my dreams. He goes up to her. He has to. He's going crazy. And she stops and looks at him and goes, I had a dream about you. Anyway, they ended up getting married and everything's fine with them. True story.
Mm-hmm.
What causes that? And then that has to do with the synchronicity.
Well, it does and it doesn't. I think Carl Jung would say that a synchronicity would be an external event that mirrored an internal situation. The famous story of the scarab and the patient, if you know that story, or in case you don't. And he was analyzing a patient, and this patient was very, very resistant to anything that wasn't just reductionist and materialist, you know. And he's telling her, no, you've got, and he gives this thing about the need for rebirth. And just then, the French door has something hit against it, and he opens the door, and a scarab comes in, a beetle. And that finally cracked her disbelief, because it was such a coincidence that he was just talking about it, and there it was, that even she couldn't write that off as meaningless. That isn't quite the same thing as what you just said. What you said, I think, what you described, one way to describe that would be, well, his upstairs and her upstairs were in communication, and they made sure that they were there at the same time in the same place, and that they couldn't blow it off because they'd had the dream ahead of time.
Would that have been two people connected to this cosmic internet?
Sure.
Yeah.
But they didn't know it.
They didn't know it at the time.
It happens all the time, I think. I mean, not to that level, but we are getting feed from the cosmic internet continually.
Can you train someone to know that you're on that cosmic internet?
You can train yourself to be more receptive and then follow where you go. I'm unwilling to define the world for people to the extent that they say, well, this is what Frank says, so it must be true. No, it's what Frank says, so that's something you can start at and see if it becomes true for you.
Next up, we go to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. William, good morning. Hi.
How are you?
Okay, we're doing fine.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather is ill. He's in Ohio, and he's probably going to last for a few days. And I write poetry.
Okay.
And you have influenced me to write something I won't read very much. I'll just read one verse. But I'll be with you even after I'm dead. Just close your eyes and open your head. To compromise what you can do, it's like turning red to blue. Do you think I can, I know that he's going to be gone in a few days, but I'm so poor I can't afford to go up there and be there. And I don't know, I've had some friends that have passed, and I feel like I'm talking with them in my head.
Yes, yes.
And it's just like, I don't know. See, he has Alzheimer's, and my grandmother does too. They're both in a nursing home. And it's just, it's very disturbing to me that I can't make it to see them. But I know I'll make it to the funerals if it has to happen, but it's going to be probably very soon.
Can I comment on that?
There's
several things in there. One, you already are in connection with them. That's quite clear. And you should feel good about that. The fact that you have been in connection with friends who have passed, you've been talking with them in your head, you probably thought, well, I'm just making this up. But, of course, in that case, you should ask yourself, why am I making this up instead of making something else up? But I believe, well, no, I don't. It's not a question of what I believe. Here's what the guys have told me, particularly about Alzheimer's. Everything that we have in our life is the mind is recorded on the Akashic record. That's what the Akashic record really is.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Our mind is non-physical. The memories are there. Alzheimer's is a progressive losing of access to those memories, but they'll all be there when they go over. You are as close to anybody as you ever were. And if you change your belief system, now you may not need to change it, it doesn't sound like you do, but if your belief system allows you to realize that you can be in very direct communication with people, then you can't get any closer communication than mind to mind.
And we'll be back with more with you, Frank, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.